Welcome to the Classic City Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tang is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. And the Dogs rock it off.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down, Bryce Young's career. You need 10, play clock at 4. From the pocket, launching downfield, underthrown, and intercepted. Kaylee Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone, and Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Classic City Sports. As always, Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams. First of all, thank y'all for being patient with us, not having an episode last week. I was out in Vegas for work, and Jonathan had some stuff going on too, so we just decided to punt on it since it was the week after Vanderbilt and going into a bye week. So there wasn't a game to really look forward to. The only thing we really could have talked too much about was a little bit from the Vandy game and maybe Brock Bowers, but on Sunday last week, we didn't know what was going on with Brock Bowers, so couldn't really give you an answer on it anyways. But this week, we are going to cover everything you can imagine there. Going to talk Brock Bowers, obviously, as you can see in the title, how Georgia can take on Florida and win without him in that that lineup. And then just some stuff that's been circulating lately. Every time you see a big player get hurt, you see a bunch of talking heads on ESPN and everywhere else give their opinion of what that player should do. So I think we're going to dive into that a little bit today as well. But it is Florida Hate Week for everybody that celebrates. It's one of the best weeks of the year, especially when Georgia is as good as they have been over the past few years. So I think we're both excited about it. And Jonathan, how are we feeling?
Doing good. You know, something that I thought was interesting today that I saw was, you know, last week Georgia opened up as like a 23.5-point favorite over Florida. That was, of course, before they found out Brock Bowers was going to have surgery, was going to be out for multiple weeks. Checked on it today. Most people still have Georgia favored by 17.5 points. Some even have them still favored by 20 points. I think the lowest was DraftKings has Georgia all the way down to 14.5 points, but still multiple score favorites over a big-time rival. So still got to be feeling good about that. It, you know, in reality, it doesn't mean a hill of beans of what Vegas means, but it also does mean something to know what the house is saying, what Vegas thinks of your football team, especially when you lose someone like Brock Bowers. Yeah. And even without Bowers, Vegas still views Georgia as a multiple score favorite in this one, as do I. I mean, I think Georgia is still the more talented team. Obviously, learning to do offense without Bowers is going to throw a little bit of a wrinkle in it, but also you have the entire bye week and then also you have entire of this week to kind of learn, get more comfortable with it, figure out who you're going to start leaning on more and more as the season progresses until you can get 19 back onto the football field. So super excited about that. I think it'll be interesting, you know, to see what Georgia will look like, because this is not only a test to see how Georgia will continue to muster on through the rest of the year without Bowers, but this is also kind of a preview of what Georgia's going to look like next year. You know, you're not going to have Brock Bowers next year. It's going to be Oscar Delp's show next year as a star tied in. So really interested to see what this offense looks like without 19.
Yeah, that's the big question that everybody has, right, is what can Georgia do offensively to get some production from somebody else that isn't named Brock Bowers, who had just under 600 yards prior to getting hurt in that game against Vanderbilt last week. And, you know, it's one of those things that's where you're going to have to trust in Kirby Smart and Mike Bobo. And I know a lot of Georgia fans struggle to trust Mike Bobo on it. And that's fine. I get it. When you've got a player like Bowers on your roster, it's obviously your number one target, right? Like, he is obviously the guy that you're going to draw up as many plays to get open as possible. And Georgia's done an extremely good job at doing that, even though defenses obviously are trying to prepare for him and try to shut him down. They aren't really able to do that. But what I do want Georgia fans to remember is you still got Oscar Delp, and no, he's not Brock Bowers, but let's be honest here. Nobody is Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is a one-of-a-kind tight end in college football. You know, he's of the likes of Kyle Pitts, where, you know, you're doing that much offensively at the tight end position that, you know, you can't really replicate it unless you're a very special player. So Delp isn't going to be able to do exactly what Bowers has done, but he is extremely good with the ball in his hands as well, and he will be able to make some plays in that passing game. But there's so many other guys on this roster that Georgia has been throwing to over the entire season. I mean, there's Rojack, there's Dominic Lovett, Ra-Ra Thomas, you know, Oscar Delp, even Mekhi Mews, Ladd McConkey. Hopefully he's back. I think that'll help take a lot of pressure off of Georgia's offense. I know he's been playing, but hopefully he's back to a little bit more, and Georgia can get him involved a few more snaps this game than he has in the past couple of weeks that he's been playing, because his limited capacity in the past few weeks definitely hopefully changes this week, in my opinion. I think that's what they're going to try to do if he's healthy. He got the bye week, extra week to get healthy on that part. So I think that's where Georgia's going to focus, is trying to get him more involved in this offense.
Yeah, I think Georgia has seven different guys right now that have 10 or more receptions on the season. So Carson Beck has been spreading the football around everywhere. I mean, all over the field to multiple different guys. And I think that's kind of why you as Georgia fans should feel confident in the sense that you do have Carson Beck as your starting quarterback. You have a guy like Mike Bobo who does an exceptional job at figuring out who he can hone in on, who he thinks he can take the who can take the load and just feeding the hot hand. I think Bobo does a great job of that, of like if someone's feeling it, if someone's feeling themselves, keep getting them the ball. He did that to Dom Lovett against Vanderbilt 2 weeks ago. Dom finished with seven receptions. He was a hot hand that week, especially with Bowers not out there. So I think you're going to see more of that. Definitely going to see more of Lovett. I think Ladd is especially someone to continue to watch, because you're going to need someone to continue to press the ball downfield, and he's a good deep threat that you can rely on. I think he's continued to get more comfortable coming back from that back injury. I think that's now three games that he's gotten to play since coming back against Auburn. So continue to get more comfortable. Like I said, you had the bye week as well within this week. So really excited to see what he does. I think the biggest guy that you have to keep an eye on is Ra-Ra Thomas. That's someone that came into the season, wasn't really getting a full grasp of the playbook, because, you know, going from Mississippi State to Georgia, two very different offenses, that's very different for him to learn. And so, yeah, it's going to take a little bit of while for him to get comfortable in the offense. And I think we've started to see that a little bit. Definitely got a preview of what he can do against Kentucky. And then he followed that up with another solid week against Vanderbilt. But that's a guy that you want to talk about stretching the ball down the field. That's exactly what number five can do for you. And especially because, you know, Bowers, it forces defenses to do different things. It forces them to defend you in different ways. And that might mean that moving forward, teams might feel more comfortable manning you up straight up, more common than they have been in the past. But someone like Ra-Ra Thomas, if you need someone to win a one-on-one, he's a safe bet to rely on. And someone, and then you compile that on with, like I said, Dominic Lovett, Ladd McConkey, even Marcus Arcimi Jack-Saint. He's been a big factor this year. And Dylan Bell, I'm interested to see what Bobo does with him now. Yeah. Maybe he starts putting him more as a wideout a little bit more now that we need someone else to add in. So you have all the weapons in the world to work with in the passing game. I think we all know that. And I think that's kind of why Georgia fans and even people outside of the Georgia program aren't exactly just saying, all right, burn it down, Georgia's done, we need to be looking elsewhere for this year's national championship, because that's why you recruit at a high level, and that's why Georgia continues to be in a great position.
Yeah, and like we talked about, like what you said a few minutes ago was, you know, this is what Georgia's going to have to do next year anyways. Georgia has to be able to be successful offensively without Brock Bowers. Now, did they plan to do that this season? Absolutely not. But they do have to make plans to do that. So they have to have stuff in their offense that are designed for other guys. And I'm sure they do, in the sense of they had to know that there was a chance a team would be able to take Brock Bowers away from you at some point during the season. And if that happens, who are you going to? What are you going to do to be able to counter, you know, respond with that and make something happen? Well, you're right in the sense that Ra-Ra Thomas will be a guy that can stretch the field in those one-on-ones. I think he's exactly who you go to in the one-on-one type situation. You need somebody to go up and get the ball. But one thing that shouldn't be, you know, overlooked is Dominic Lovett has been a target for, you know, a big portion of the season as well. He's got 31 catches. Only person leading him on the team with catches is Brock Bowers with 41. So he has been a favorite target for Carson Beck. So I expect that to maybe not necessarily increase, but at least continue in the sense that it has, where you expect him to get 5-6 catches a game, make big plays. And then Rosemy Jack-Saint, he's been one of the favorite targets on third down outside of Bowers as well. So he's still got guys to go to in key moments and key situations. We need to stretch it down the field. You need a third down conversion. or you just need some consistent catches throughout the game. He's got those guys there. And to even go to what you're talking about with the downfield threat, a huge person to help with that is Ladd McConkie. I think people forget that he has been one of Georgia's biggest deep threat players at wide receiver, because you don't necessarily expect that from him because he's a little bit smaller, but he's got so much speed. He creates separation and he can create those downfield plays. A lot of times you see him go up the seams or run that skinny post, that kind of thing. And that usually hits for him some big plays over the past couple of seasons with him. So if he is back healthy, like I hope he is this week, which like you said, he's played three games and you've seen him gradually get more catches as that time has gone on. The first game, I think he got three catches. All of them happened to be third down conversions though, so they were big. And then Kentucky, he started getting a little bit more. And then like you said, Vanderbilt, he got a little bit more play there, more snaps, and more involved in that aspect of it. So I think those are key right there. So you've got your downfield threats in Ra-Ra Thomas, being a one-on-one threat. You've got Ladd McConkie for your deep ball down the middle, that kind of thing. Don't forget, you still have Arian Smith, who has had some trouble making some catches this year, but he has been one of those big explosive play guys where he also just separates from a defender, makes a big play for a touchdown, that kind of performance from him. So you've got plenty of guys in that aspect. Once again, you've got the third down option with Rosemee Jack-Saint and other guys there as well. So I think George is going to be okay. I think the game plan is obviously different, but once again, you still have Oscar Delp, who is one of the better tight ends in the game overall. We haven't seen that much from him because you've got Brock Bowers on your roster and he's been playing, but this is an opportunity for him to really step up and make a play in the absence of Brock Bowers. You get to see what he can actually do. And then you've got Lawson Lucky, who has now started to dress and actually play in some of these games. He came in against Vanderbilt when Bowers went out. So Georgia can still run that 12 personnel offense with Lawson Lucky and Oscar Delp. And so a lot of the game plan itself doesn't change, just maybe who the ball goes to in those situations change.
Yeah, I think you'll definitely see a little bit of personnel change. I don't think that you're going to see a whole lot of 12 personnel now with Bowers out, just because Bowers is the reason why you were running 12 personnel. I mean, he is the entire reason why that was basically your featured personnel group as an offense, because you could attach Delp at the end of the line, and you could pretty much pluck and play Bowers anywhere you wanted to, and it just changed defenses schematically because you had to follow him around. You had to keep in mind where he was at all times. Even he could play at the end of the line, and he played such a big role in the run game blocking as well. So I think that while I don't think they're going to completely abandon it, because you do have a true freshman like Lawson Lucky, but he is also a true freshman, as I just mentioned. So it's going to continue to take some time for him to get comfortable. He's also a guy that's coming back from tightrope surgery, which is the same thing that Bowers is going to be coming back from. So it's going to take a little bit of time. Yeah. I was glad to see that he did get some reps against Vanderbilt. That's good. Get your feet wet a little bit. Continue to build up some confidence over the bye week. I mean, we heard all the rave about him throughout the springtime. So obviously that is a guy that is capable of taking on a prominent role in this offense. And he's obviously a big playmaker, but it's also very different of doing that in spring practice and then also doing it on Saturdays against SEC opponents. But I think you're definitely going to see some Lawson Lucky action. And maybe, you know, he just hits that game breaker eventually, finally gets a little bit comfortable. But yeah, I think Oscar Delp is a guy that I think a lot of people are really excited to see, just because, you know, with Brock Bowers out there on the field, you're not going to get to see Oscar Delp do a whole lot with the ball in his hands, because why would you not be getting the ball to 19? So, and so I think if there is anybody that is kind of like a sliver of what Brock Bowers is and maybe a little more, it probably is Oscar Delp. Oscar is obviously bigger than Brock Bowers is, measures out well. And I don't know that he's going to be able to produce the yards after catch like Bowers is, but to your point, like you mentioned, who can at the tight end position like that? Dude just bounce off Bowers for whatever reason. He's just an absolute unit with the ball in his hands. But I think Delp can absolutely be productive in this offense. And I also think that you stay more 11 personnel probably now because of all the wide receivers that me and you just rattled off and their ability to kind of add some different roles and wrinkles into this offense. And it's different things that defenses have to worry about. You know, that's something that me and you talked about in the offseason. Was one thing that we loved about this wide receiver group is they all excel at different things. You know, they all don't just do the same thing. It's a lot of different things that you have to worry about. Like what you have to worry about with Ladd McConkie is a little different than what you have to worry about with Rojack or someone else or Dylan Bell or insert anybody. It's just different things that the defense has to worry about. So I think you can still stretch and stress these defenses, especially someone like Florida. And Mike Bobo has been putting together some great game plans for every single opponent every single week. And Carson Beck has been delivering every time. And a big plus, too, that we haven't even mentioned yet is the run game has finally started to produce. Dejon Edwards is without a doubt your number one guy. The offensive line has been playing out of their minds. I thought they had a great week against Vanderbilt, especially kind of going in on the fly without Xavier Truss. I thought Monroe Freeling plugged in really well. Dylan Fairchild, Micah Morris, those guys are playing really well. So you have your offensive line playing great. Your quarterback is playing great. Your running game is finally getting some going. Georgia's still in a great spot.
Can we talk about that part real quick that you just brought up? Monroe Freeling getting plugged in there with Truss out. How crazy! I mean, he's a true freshman. He just got on campus, and everybody knows Georgia's got offensive lineman depth, right? Like, there's all those guys there, but he's the first guy they go to as a true freshman to help take over at guard. That's insane. I think that's huge for Georgia to see that talent emerge at that position when you needed it most. And that's what we're talking about with all this other stuff, right? When somebody goes down, Georgia's recruited at such a high level that they can plug somebody else in and pretty much not necessarily get the exact same production, because sometimes seniority and the experience plays a huge factor when you're in these SEC games and on the road. All that kind of makes a difference. But when you can plug in a true freshman offensive lineman to really help your offense when you needed it, that's a massive step forward. So it goes to what we're talking about this whole time, because now you got other people have to step up for Bowers. He was able to step up for Truss, and that made a huge difference for Georgia to be able to continue to run the ball, continue to do what they want to do, and have those options offensively. So I was excited to see him come out there. I think that was huge for Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, you and I went and saw him in San Antonio, and that Monroe Freeling that we saw in San Antonio was not the same Monroe Freeling that we saw and against Vanderbilt. Not to say that he played poorly out there, but just body-wise, he's put on a tremendous good amount of weight. He's bigger. Yeah. He's stronger. And, I mean, he looked the part of an SEC tackle, especially as a freshman. Now, of course, was it perfect? By no means, no. But was he serviceable in a spotlight where he was like, holy, hey, crap hit the fan, it's time for you to roll out there? Yeah, he filled that role phenomenally, and he went in there and he didn't play like a freshman. And that's the best thing that you could hope for in a situation like that. And I thought it was cool to hear Kirby Smart talk about it, because he said actually like 3 weeks ago, as soon as they lost Mims, they're like, hey, you're one snap away now. You're one play away from having to be in at right tackle. So let's start practicing like that. We're going to prepare you for that moment. And sure enough, it happens against Vanderbilt. And that's part of the reason why he was ready to go in there, because this coaching staff, man, they're always a step ahead. I'm sure they've had the same conversation with Oscar Delp of, hey, man, we're one play away where you are our feature tight end, and it's time for you to step up in that big role. Or Lawson Luckley, like, you're one play away from me. All of a sudden, your snap count's going to go up. So I think the coaching staff does a great job of preparing each and every player for every possible situation. And I think that's why over years past, you know, when you do lose a George Pickens, when you do lose an A.D. Mitchell, when you do lose a Nolan Smith after the Florida game last year, yes, it's scary on the surface level. As soon as it happens, you know, panic mode hits. It's like, what are we going to do? I think we're doomed. I don't know if we have anybody that can step up. But Georgia has always been able to kind of keep things going, keep the momentum rolling, and almost not miss a single beat when those players are out. Obviously, you notice when Nolan Smith is no longer in the football game, or you notice when George Pickens is not on the outside and hitting those deep shots and making the big plays that he does. But Georgia has always found a way to fill those voids and almost make it seem like those players aren't even being missed, and that this is just who the team was to be with to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. You just see these guys step up, and it makes you happy to see, like you said, the coaching staff doing it. The recruiting has always been there for Georgia under Kirby Smart, so you know you've got the guys on your roster and just getting them ready. And you're talking about Monroe Freeling looking different from when we saw him. Guys, we saw him at the All-American game in San Antonio in January. We're 10 months past that, right? And he's always, obviously, the height's there, right? He's a big guy in that sense, but he was a thinner guy when we saw him there. So like you're saying, he put on that weight, and it's good weight at that point. So Georgia's strength and conditioning staff getting these guys ready to go for NFL type, or not NFL, but like SEC play is huge, because that strength and conditioning, like, these guys come out of high school. Some of them are just big guys, right? Some of them just are from the get-go, and Georgia actually has to almost slim them and kind of get that muscle tone back to them in that way. But they can also just put on the weight when they need to. We've seen Delp do that at the tight end position, knowing that he was going to be the end of line guy this year and kind of take over for Darnell Washington. So we saw him put on weight this offseason because they knew they needed him to. And it's impressive to see this staff from top to bottom And I think you can't complain about it. And like you said, when these guys come in, sometimes it feels like you're not missing a step. And obviously you will feel like you're missing a step without Bowers out there just because he is a generational player. But you have confidence in the guys that are behind him to be able to continue to succeed and hopefully keep Georgia's offense rolling the correct way. Now, let's talk about this before we get into, we still got to talk about Florida and what to expect there and everything else and the defensive side of the ball for Georgia this coming week. But let's go over to, since we've been talking about Bowers, all of the stuff we, you know, you and I were texting about it earlier. You found this article that's from Forbes talking about, you know, maybe he should stop playing college football and be ready for the draft on it, which seems to be what happens every time a big player gets hurt or anything like that. Go ahead and talk to me about that. What did you see in that article and explain how that makes you feel?
Well, shoot, you don't even have to be hurt. People are doing it to Caleb Williams right now after USC just took their second loss. Like, hey, Caleb, just go ahead and hang it up. Don't play the rest of the year. You're not playing for a Heisman or a national championship anymore. So just quit on your football team and don't play the rest of the year. But this, it really bothers me about Brock Bowers, and especially this article, because, you know, these people are saying, like, the title of the article was Brock Bowers should sack Georgia football and save his big NFL payout for what's going to happen in the NFL draft. Basically saying, like, Brock Bowers needs to say goodbye to Georgia, needs to say goodbye to all of his teammates and say, I'm going to NFL. I don't need you guys anymore. I did my time. I had all my success. I won two national titles. I won an SEC championship, yada, yada, yada. I don't need you guys anymore. What was funny about in the article is it says Bowers would tremendously help out with Georgia's chances of winning a three-peat, of winning an SEC championship, of him possibly still being an All-American tight end, et cetera, him doing all these incredible things if he were to come back, yet he should sit out still? First off, that makes no sense. If a player can help out his team, which – I mean, I would assume that the person that wrote the article had played sports before. If anybody's played sports before, I would at least hope that if you knew you could help out your team in any way, shape, or form, you would want to fill that role and you would want to do that for your team. But nonetheless, two, these people that are making these claims and spouting off these horrible opinions about Brock Bowers have no idea who Brock Bowers is as a player. Right. I saw these two numbnucks off of, I'm not Barstool, I'm not going to say their names, but I'm sure you can figure out who it is, talking about how Brock Bowers could potentially return if Georgia got up some million-dollar NIL deal for him to pay him and come back. First, again, that's Bowers not Georgia's business. That's not Brock Bowers either. These people do not understand Brock Bowers as a person. Like, think of it this way. This is the first time that Bowers has ever missed any time with Georgia due to an injury. Do you think it's because this is the first time he's ever been injured, Stoddard? No. Brock Bowers has dealt with injuries his entire time at Georgia. This is a very physical sport. We know this. We see this every single week. We see it every single year. Teams are hindered by it every single year. It's because Bowers wants to be out on the freaking field, regardless of any pain he is in. If he can play, he wants to suit up with his boys and go play. I told you the story about UAB, about basically how they told him, hey, we don't know if we want you to play today. And he was like, or UT Martin, excuse me. And he was like, screw that, dude. I want to go play with my guys. So let me go out there and at least run around and wear my jersey and be with my people. That's who Brock Bowers is. Brock Bowers has never been a guy that's like, oh, screw it, whatever. I don't want to play anymore. Like, I'll just sit it out and wait out for the NFL draft. You are out of your freaking mind if you think Brock, like, and even that, this, the conversation isn't even had off of this. If Brock Bowers didn't want to come back, the surgery would have never happened. He would have just simply said, all right, I'll just ice it every day, do my due diligence and rehab, and I'll wait until and see what happens at the NFL draft. No. Kirby Smart even said as soon as he found out he needed surgery, he wanted to do it right then and there. That's how much urgency he had behind this decision. And that tells me the dude wants to freaking play.
Well, exactly. And that's the best point you can make right there, because the whole point of that surgery is to speed up that recovery, because it's just a high ankle sprain, right? That'll recover on its own. If you're trying to just be ready for the NFL draft and combine isn't until March is the combine, I think. And then the draft is April. So if that's all he's concerned about, just take care of business, give it 2 months, sit on your butt, you know, and hang out. But no, instead, he went and had the surgery. That's exactly what you're saying. It tells you he wants to play. And if you follow Georgia at all, like you said as well, if you know who Brock Bowers is, he's going to play if he can physically play. He's not going to quit on this team. I'm so tired of the narrative that all of these media members push, where they're trying to basically get, they're trying to talk the player into quitting on their team, as if NFL teams want their players to just quit when they're hurt or something like that. Like, that's not what the NFL is looking for anyways. I think it gives a bad sign to the NFL when players sit out because they just don't want to play because they could get hurt. Or maybe they got hurt and they don't want to risk coming back, even though they could, because they could get hurt again. Brock Bowers is a first-round draft pick. He was arguably going to be a top 10 draft pick. Now he's hurt. That might fall a little bit. So even in their own thought process, right, he might want to come back because he could still get himself back up into that top 10 conversation. If he comes back for the last few games of the season, plays in the SEC championship game, in the playoffs, and goes off with 100 plus yards in all those games and shows that he's there to win and he wants his team to win, helps his team win, that might improve his NFL draft stock. Yes, I think if he doesn't play another down in college football, he is still a first round draft pick because he has shown them what he can do. And he has been hurt. We've talked about it several times where he's banged up. You see him go down for a play or so, but he always seems to try to come back in or does come back in. Against Kentucky, he got a stinger in the, it looked like his left calf, and it looked bad. He was hobbling a lot when it happened in that aspect of it. Goes into the tent, comes back out with tape on that calf muscle, and he's back out there immediately afterwards. So he doesn't sit when he doesn't want to, when he wants to play. If he wants to play, he's going to be out there. And guess what? Brock Bowers always wants to play. And if he is physically able, I promise you he's going to come back faster than people probably expect, just because that's how Brock Bowers is. He's obviously going to be attacking this rehab stuff very aggressively like he always does. And Georgia staff does a really good job. Now, I have confidence in Georgia staff and Kirby Smart to say, hey, you don't need to come back and play right now because you're not ready. And we want to make sure you're 100% because we aren't going to risk your NFL career. I trust Kirby to make sure that he's not going to risk his NFL career in re-injuring said ankle, right? If he comes back and gets hurt from something else or a different way, that's football. It is what it is on that part. But I feel confident that Georgia won't let him step foot on that field until he is ready to go back normal. And that's not going to be a problem. Now, as far as the national media goes, you brought up Caleb Williams a second ago. This is the type of mentality that ESPN and all these other guys that cover sports have, right? This is Emmanuel Ocho. I'm just going to read the Acho, or however you pronounce his name. I don't even know. But he's always got some crazy takes out there. But this is what he said about Caleb Williams after losing two games now, where their season seems to be, you know, they can't make the playoffs. They won't be able to do anything in that aspect. This is what he said he should do. He said, with national championship hopes down, Caleb Williams should consider sitting out the rest of the season. The Heisman is a long shot. College football playoffs are even less likely, and he won't play in a bowl game. So he's already saying that he won't play in the bowl game anyways because he's going to sit that out. That's number one, right? The risk of playing far outweighs the reward business decision. You are having this man quit on his team just because his team can't win a national championship and he can't win two Heisman trophies in a row. How many guys do we see win two Heisman trophies in the first place? And were you already handing him the Heisman this year to where other guys are playing very well out there that were already making arguments for it? You were just going to go ahead and hand it to him. But no, now that he might not get that because he had another bad game, and now that their team can't make the college football playoff, you think he needs to quit. Same thing with Bowers. He needs to quit because he's got to think about himself. Man, I understand these guys are playing college football in order to get to the NFL. That's a fact. They are trying to do it so they can go make the money in the NFL and have a career. I get that. But these guys are competitors. And everybody in the media seems to think that they're just there for themselves. I don't think I would be so shocked if I saw Caleb Williams, even though he's the one that's sitting here saying that he might come back another year. Think about that too. He also said he might come back another year if he doesn't want to go to a specific team. And now you're saying he should just sit out the rest of the season and go to the draft? That makes no sense. That's not his thought process. But I would find it so hard to believe that this guy would just quit and be done, even though he's the guy that's sitting here saying he wants ownership of an NFL team if he goes pro as well. So I still would find it shocking to see that.
99.9% of college football players and teams do not win a national championship every single season. So I guess every team that's already basically eliminated from the college football playoff, they should all just forfeit the remainder of their games and not play, because you're not playing for anything, basically, is kind of the gist that I'm getting at from that. But yeah, it's just a ridiculous conversation. I'm not here for it. I'm not a fan for it. I'm not a fan for telling these players what to do, and especially not a fan of just telling them that just because, you know, your national championship hopes and your Heisman hopes are no longer in the conversation that you should just quit because you didn't basically get your way. That's a bunch of bull crap. That's a bunch of teaching kids a terrible mindset, because what's going to happen in the NFL when he goes to the worst team in the league because he's the number one overall pick? You think he's going to be competing for Super Bowls and MVP awards year one? No, probably not. So I just think it's a horrible mindset to have, and especially for these analysts and fans of the game to be spouting off these opinions. I'm just not here for it. But, you know,
time is crazy. All the way back these guys are former players that say it, right? Yeah. Like Emmanuel, he played in college and the NFL, like, and he's out here just talking about just quitting. And that blows my mind. Like, it absolutely blows my mind. I think these kids, like, I understand we're in a day and age where people sit out bowl games and stuff, but when they sit out a bowl game, it's because it's a meaningless game that just brings home like a little souvenir for the school that wins. Like it like, especially if it's not a New Year's Six bowl or something like that. Like I get that to an extent. I really do. But we're talking regular season. As soon as a player decides to just sit out regular season games because they don't want to, you know, risk injuring themselves, that's when, one, the sport itself is pretty much just toast. Like, there's nothing, the game is done, because why are any of them going to do it? That means, hey, guess what? Before the season started, I got a first round grade. I'm just not going to play this year. But I don't think that would go over well with the NFL. Like you just said a second ago, they get drafted to the worst team. When you get drafted high, you're going to a bad football team. So you lose the first like 4 of 6 games. Are you just going to be like, all right, well, I'm done this year. We'll come back next year. Y'all build up the roster for me. I'll be back next year. No, it doesn't work that way. You can't do it that way. So it's really ticks me off to see everybody just assume these players are going to quit or should quit, especially when you know who Brock Bowers is, and he would never do that. Like, he would never be that type of player to do it. So to see narratives being pushed by other people that make it seem like that's what he's going to do or what he should do, it's just, I'm sure it ticks him off, because he can't be happy to see it. That's the furthest thing from what he would want to do.
Yeah. And, you know, tying this all back to Bowers, you know, one thing that Dan was kind of getting at is that this surgery does basically mean that it is less likely for it to happen in the future. But more importantly is, once you've rehabilitated yourself from the surgery, you're good to go. Like, you are 100% good to go. You are fine once you are healed, completely healed from the surgery. That's what makes it very different from just like your typical rehab from a high ankle sprain of like, you got to kind of sit on it a little bit. You got to ice it. You got to do all this extra stuff. But like, one day you might have a setback, and that basically resets you from your timeline. We've kind of seen this with Georgia players in the past, where it seems like it takes them months to get back from a high ankle sprain because things like this happen. Whereas the tie rope surgery, once you're good, you're good. So like, once Bowers is able to play, he is fine. There's no more worrying about like this potential setback or anything like that. So that's good news to hear. But also, like, even if you were going to try and push the narrative like Brock Bowers has nothing else to play for anymore because he's already won the Mackey Award, he's already been an All-American, he's already won 2 national titles. Think of it this way. Brock Bowers could go his entire college career with only losing 1 game in his whole career. Think about that. 1 entire game over 3 years as a college athlete. That is insane to think about. Nonetheless, 3 national titles, something that hasn't been done since Minnesota in the 1930s. Also, he could be the first player to ever win back-to-back Mackey Awards. Like, there is still plenty of that. There's GOAT status in all of college football to think about. So there's still plenty of stuff for Bowers to play for. But even if that stuff didn't exist, even if he wasn't playing for any of that, I still think that he would come back and he would suit up for Georgia again.
Yeah, I think he would, but it's one of those things that he's just that type of guy. That's the thing that I think people in the national media are missing. If you're around Georgia's team and you see what he's done and what he can do, like, he's going to be a guy to want to come back and keep playing. And he wants to be the guy that comes back and wins another championship just because he's very competitive. You know, think about it. He has the chance, like you were just talking about, only losing 1 game, but going back to back to back, winning 3 national championships in his college career. 3 for 3, and then being done after that. Like, you can't have a better college career as a player than to be able to see your team go that far and being a major contributor on all 3 of those teams. So I expect him to come back. As far as how long, we don't really know. Obviously, they said 4 to 6 weeks. You know, we're going into, you know, week 1 is over at this point. So hopefully in the next few weeks, you start seeing the chance for him to be able to come back if he is healthy and ready to go. But like I said earlier, Georgia obviously will not rush this in the sense of he will be 100% ready as far as the ankle is concerned before Georgia lets him go out there and take a snap offensively again for Georgia. So with that being said, this week coming up, like we've been talking about in the first part of it, Georgia versus Florida in Jacksonville, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. There's a lot to look at. Florida's an interesting team to kind of dive into. They really like are kind of hit or miss each week, right? They show signs of being really good one week. The very next week, they end up losing to a team that you thought they would be able to beat at that point, right? But what are your thoughts going in? I know at the beginning of the show, you said that you wouldn't be surprised to see Georgia win by multiple scores, which I think is a fair assessment to make. But what's your first point that you're looking at for Georgia versus Florida this weekend?
Whether Georgia fans want to admit it or not, Graham Mertz is playing really good football. I think that's the best thing about the most surprising thing and best thing about this Florida football team is the quarterback play. Not many people, including myself, expected Graham Mertz to come out here and play like the way he has. And if he continues to play like he has, I think he's second in the nation in completion percentage, or maybe third. So he's playing high level football, and he's done a lot with very little weapons on the outside. You know, Pershaw is about basically all he has as a weapon, as a wide receiver, yet he's still getting the job done. But then again, what I would say to that is Florida had a first-round draft pick at quarterback last year, and they still weren't able to do very much against Georgia. Yeah, so while Graham Mertz is playing good football, I don't know that Florida has the weapons, has enough weapons to match up offensively against a defense like Georgia's. I know people want to go ahead and throw Georgia's defense under the bus and want to give them a hard time. Guys, it is not as bad as you guys are making it out to be. Go look at the numbers. Go look at the stats. Go look at the context around each situation. Georgia's defense is completely fine. I told this on Talk the Dog the other day with Brooks and Christian. Georgia was two plays away from beating Vanderbilt to holding Vanderbilt to 7 total points. You know, you're one interception late in the game away from keeping it from getting to 20. And then you're also a one fourth down conversion that Vanderbilt converted because Shepard made an insane reception down near the goal line to then lead to the scoring play the very next play. Like, you're two plays away from keeping Vanderbilt to 7 total points that game. So, and you held them to like 219 total yards. Like, the defense is fine. I don't think there's any concern with this defense. They're only going to continue to get better. I think they have only continued to get better. Plus, mind you, everybody was worried about Georgia's rush defense against Kentucky and what Ray Davis was able to do against Florida. And what did Georgia do to Ray Davis the next week? You held him to like 56 total rushing yards, and you held Kentucky to like, I don't know, 60-something total. So I think Georgia's defense is fine, and I especially think that the offense is going to be able to do a lot against Florida. I think this, you know, I say this every time for Florida just because I believe it every time we play against them. Of like, it's probably going to be close in the first half. It's probably going to be maybe like a one-score game going into halftime or something like that. But I just ultimately think that talent is going to prevail in this football game like it has the last 2 years, and Georgia is going to come out on top. You know, it's just one of those games where things might get a little crazy at first because Carson Beckett's his first time making a start in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in a rivalry game like this. Things might get a little hectic at first, and you're kind of getting adjusted to Brock Bowers not being there. But once they settle in, man, I just don't see a way that Georgia doesn't come out on top. I think Florida is a better football team than when they played Utah week one on the road. And I think Billy Napier has done a great job of continuing to keep that program afloat, because me and you sat here before the season started and just didn't see much success from that team this year, especially with Graham Mertz at quarterback. So I think Billy Napier has done a great job. I think Florida is improved this year. I just don't know that they're going to be able to do enough to knock off a number one team like Georgia.
Yeah, I'd say that our preseason predictions, one of the teams that we were most wrong about is Florida, because at this point, they're already, you know, right around that win total that we thought they'd be. We thought maybe 5-6 wins, something like that would be about it. Well, they're already 5-2. And like you said, they're getting a lot better performance out of Graham Mertz. I mean, I think he's, you know, he is at 69-something% completion percentage. Nice. And he's thrown for just under 1,900 yards, 14 touchdowns, 2 picks. That's the big thing right there. He doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Neither does Carson Beck. He's only got 4 on the season, so it's pretty close right there. And Carson has thrown for more yards, obviously,
in that aspect. I will say this about Mertz. You know, I was watching the South Carolina game coming home from, I believe it was from the Vanderbilt game. Mertz may only have 2 interceptions, but I've seen him throw multiple interception-worthy footballs that just didn't end up being interceptions. So he has done a good job, you're right, of protecting the football, only having 2 interceptions. Obviously, you're doing something right, but I think there is a way and there is a plan.
There's opportunity. Yeah,
especially like a guy like Tyke Smith, who's been making plays, and a guy like Malachi Starks, and a guy like Javon Bullard. There's room for opportunity for Georgia to create some turnover for this Florida Gator offense.
Georgia could definitely get one in this game for sure. I think going back to what you were talking about with the defense, you know, giving up points to Vanderbilt and in a few other games that we've seen them give up more points than you want to against some lower competition. I think one thing that I've said on here several times, and I'll say it again, and I will probably continue to say it throughout the entire season, is if you were to take away some of the turnovers that Georgia has done offensively, there's a lot less points in all of those games. You know, you could probably take 14 points off of several of those games, you know, because of those turnovers. And that's what's been happening. I mean, you literally can take one off the board against Vanderbilt. You know, they picked it off, got it down to the one. And the only reason they didn't score on that was because our boy Carson out there about gave his life.
Vengeance.
He about gave his life to stop that from being a pick six. And so when you take those turnovers away, and I think that's key for this game, because even though it's not like a true road game, it is a very hostile environment. It's half Georgia fans, half Florida fans. If you let one side on either side, Georgia or Florida fans, get really into the game, the stands feel like it's full of that one set of fans, right? Like it feels like it's a stadium full of Florida fans if things are rolling for them. It feels like a stadium full of Georgia fans if they're rolling for it, because they get extremely loud. It's one of the best environments in college football as far as a neutral site goes. I know there's some other really good ones out there, so I'm not comparing, but I would put it up with the best out there as well. So the environment can get very loud and very rambunctious. So like my key for Georgia has been several weeks of the year is don't go in there and make stupid turnovers. If you protect the football, and honestly, if it's a pick and it's, you know, a good play or something like that, or maybe it's just not the best throw in the world, you can kind of live with those. What you can't live with is as many fumbles as Georgia's had this year. And even though they've gotten some of them back, they put the ball on the ground way too often. And if you do that in a game against Florida, especially if you do it in the first half, all of a sudden they can score early and they can be in that game. But I am with you in what you were saying, where it's the type of game, just because it's Florida, that and the way that the season's gone so far in general, like Georgia hasn't gotten out to scoring 30 points in the first half, you know, a bunch, or even 25 points, 20 points in the first half every game kind of thing. So Georgia's going to probably score a couple touchdowns in the first half. Florida might get one or they may not, but it'll probably be a closer game than you want it to be. And then by the time the game is over, that's when you actually see how it all plays out. And Georgia probably takes a bigger lead before it's over. But this game, everybody gets fired up for. And when players are playing for motivation and because they hate the other team on the other side, we know Kirby cannot stand Florida. We know that Florida players cannot stand Georgia, right? And Georgia players can't stand Florida. You're going to get everybody's best. And I know that, you know, we've talked about it several times in different ways, but, you know, everyone always says, if you need motivation, then maybe you aren't that guy. Sometimes you are that guy, but you get a little extra motivation or a little chip for whatever reason, because somebody said something about you, or somebody, you know, when it's a team that you really, really cannot stand, you really want to put them in a bad spot. And I think that's what you get from both sides, which is why you usually see a pretty good game.
Yeah, I mean, Dan and Jenna are talking about in the comments of like, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is about Georgia, but man, whenever they need to show up, when they have something to prove, that's typically when their best games come. We kind of saw that against Kentucky, when that notion of like, oh, we're going to find out if Georgia's for real. I think Georgia could be on upset alert because the Russian defense isn't all that great, yada, yada, yada. I think this is another one of those games of where Georgia has something to prove, because everybody's saying, oh, they don't have Brock Bowers anymore. That offense might be a little more suspect. They don't have their safety blanket anymore. I think this is an opportunity for someone to get after the quarterback and, you know, get after Georgia's offense and kind of shut them down a little bit. Georgia has something to prove this week, and not that they didn't already have something to prove, but when you kind of sprinkle in that extra motivation, if you can give any Georgia any type of extra juice, they certainly use it to their advantage, and they show it on the football field. But yeah, rivalry games, just something you can't always predict. I think we kind of saw that in the Auburn game of like, as long as you don't give some early turnovers, if you don't allow Auburn to get that kind of take over the momentum early in the football game, and you have to work your way back to capturing it back, then I think you'll be okay. Good news is it's not a true road game because it is half and half. It is that neutral site, like you said, so you don't have to necessarily fight the crowd as much as you did against Auburn. But nonetheless, still want to play a clean football game, especially in the first half, and just kind of capture the lead, shut it down after that, and just keep the Florida Gators at bay. I kind of see that's how this game goes. Like I said, I think it could stay close for the first half, maybe a little bit even to the third quarter, just because I think Florida is still a pretty good football team.
Yeah.
I just think Georgia's better, and I think they're going to win the football game. And I think Carson Beck has continued to play exceptionally well, and I see no signs of that stopping.
No, and one thing that, you know, it does add pressure, and like Mr. Williams in the comments talking about, Carson's from Jacksonville, right? So he's going back to his hometown to play this game. That is motivation on that part, but you also got to worry about, you know, you're back at your hometown, like that kind of thing. Sometimes people get a little weary at times, but what I will say that we've learned from different Georgia quarterbacks over the years is one, Stetson has lit them up in Jacksonville. Even Jake Fromm was lighting them up. His best games at Georgia were playing against Florida, where he would throw for three touchdowns, you know, and 300 yards, that kind of stuff. Like, he would have those big games because there's just that extra step of like, let's do it. And I think Kirby is willing to take chances. I've seen Kirby go for it on fourth down several times in those situations where you may have had a decision to make, but he's like, no, we're going for it. We're going to do this. So he's a little more aggressive. He's a little more offensive in that sense. But I think it's a good game for Falcons, because I was reading a comment. Thanks, Zach. But it's a good game for Georgia to go down there and just prove that they are who they are, right? Like, we saw it against Kentucky. It was one of those games where Georgia had the chance to prove that they were the best team in the country, and they were able to do it. This is a good opportunity to do the same, even without Brock Bowers. I think Georgia as a team has more to prove because, hey, guess what? We can do this without Brock Bowers. I know he's been a huge part of this offense, but he is not our entire offense. We can do something else, and I think that's going to be proven this weekend as well.
Yeah, if you need any extra motivation or confidence, just hit up Jenna, because she's bringing it all over the comment section. She says that they struggle with South Carolina and they struggle with and they lost to Kentucky. So Georgia will have no problem with the Gators. So you heard it here first. Georgia's going to take care of business on Saturday. But yeah, I think me and you are both kind of just repeating the same thing at this point of like, yeah, Georgia's going to win this football game. I think it's just a great opportunity, like Dana's saying, for a lot of different players to kind of step up and make their role known and make their presence felt. So I think it's just – that would be a good football game. Really excited, of course, to have some Georgia football back this weekend and get to watch them for the rest of the year. No more bye weeks, no more off weeks. So time to hunker down for the second half of the season and get ready for another push for a third straight national title, and just keep praying and crossing your fingers every week that you keep hearing good news of Brock Bowers. I think maybe you could start hearing a return for a Tennessee game, or even maybe a Georgia Tech game. But nonetheless, I think if Georgia makes it to Atlanta for SEC championship game, you can be almost 100% certain that 19 will be out there for that one. So good news all around for that. Don't worry, Georgia fans. Georgia has plenty of talent to keep on pushing this thing forward and keep being the best team in the nation. Stoddard, that's all I got. You got anything else?
No, I think you covered it right there for me.
All right, good to hear. All right. Well, guys, I'm going to do all this stuff. Like, follow us on Twitter. Like and subscribe if you haven't already. You guys have continued to help us push that subscriber count forward. I think we hit over 400 subscribers a couple weeks ago. You guys are clutch for that one. So keep on pressing that subscribe button. Keep on hitting that like button so we can continue to grow this family and continue to bring Dog Nation into this great podcast that you guys obviously enjoy every single Sunday at 8 o'clock. There's all the socials down below. If you haven't seen them already and haven't hit those follow buttons, go ahead and do so already. And Stoddard, you can close us out.
Yeah, I will be in Jacksonville this week, so I'll be sure to be loud and keep those dogs going for y'all. But as always, keep it classy in the Classic City. We will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. Take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stodfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime...
Expresses sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.